Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the pool room at the Assembly Rooms. Please welcome a man who's working an hour a day without a day off for 12 days in a row. He's already done 5 days. How is he managing it? It's Richard Herring. It's incredible. I can't tell you how tired I am. It's ridiculous. Welcome to... No one works as hard as me. Imagine that. I'm calling this work as well. This is what I'm doing here. This is it. Yeah. Please, welcome. It's lovely to see you. Thank you for coming to Richard Herring's Loquacious for the 6th time podcast. Halfway through. So this is after we've done this one. We're halfway through. Though I was talking to the owner of the Tempting Tatty the other day. He calls it Rahalastapus. I don't know. I actually haven't been to the Tempting Tatty. That's a lie. I haven't been. I go to the Tempting Tatty every Edinburgh. I've been asked, except possibly the first in 1987. I think it might have opened in 1988, or that's when I realised it was there. And they still haven't named the medium potato with orange cheddar and mango chutney the Richard Herring. And I give them so much publicity. I don't know. Don't. How they dare do it. What's going on? Yesterday I was thinking, you know, I've been at the Edinburgh Fringe, I've done 26 years over the last 35 years here. I was just thinking, I'm not sure it's for me. I'm going to give it 35 more years, and then if it's not, it still makes me just unhappy most of the time. So it's good. I don't know. I had a great tweet. Someone tweeted me to say that they were at breakfast in their hotel and they heard another couple at the next table yesterday saying, we're going to see Richard Herring. He's a Scottish comedian. So it's good, you know, it's good. But, you know, you have to remember, I've got such an authentic accent. It's often people, you say that's enough. That convinces people. And I'm not going to come. I'm not coming back here. I'll do the rest. I'll finish these shows, and then that's it. I'm going to go and see Comedy Club for Kids with my kids. I'm not strange today, which is A lot of fun, I understand. I'm a bit worried about taking my kids into a comedy club because it's sort of, this could be, you know, it could be it for them. My son is very into telling jokes, and he has a catchphrase. If you laugh at a joke, he says, "Is someone laughing in here?" Which I think I might nick that. Because it's, you know, it's quite good for people who just get disparate laughter every now and again. Is someone laughing at him? Stop it. Stop laughing. And I've been I'm still thinking about Cat in the Hat, which was one of the first shows I saw. I don't like the Cat in the Hat. I think he's a prick. I think he's worse than a prick. I think he's basically a sort of child molesting. He sort of wheedles his way into these kids' house when the parents are out and sort of tries to break everything. And it's just a little bit suspect. And the guy playing the Cat in the Hat, A, it was 10 o'clock in the morning. You know, they're probably student actors. They were very good. But the guy hadn't quite bothered to put on his white makeup all like, so his ears were still human coloured and the back of his neck was, and it made it feel especially like sort of creepy. But it was just, yeah, I can't even be bothered to do. Fair enough, he's 10 o'clock in the morning on on a Saturday morning. So they've been out. They probably haven't been to bed. It's the worst gig you can get. 10 o'clock in the morning. But I'm not sure about the Cat in the Hat. Not sure. I think that might be the next celebrity to get you treat. He was hiding in plain sight, wasn't he? Hiding in plain sight. Right, look, we're going to crack on. I went to see my guest show last night, and it's absolutely fantastic. If you can get tickets, do go and see it. It was sold out last night, and it's sold out for the next two nights. Two for one. I think they're probably best known as the Icelandic entry, Flo og Joan, from the Isolation Song Contest. Will you please welcome Flo and Joan, ladies and gentlemen? Come on in. Hello. Welcome. Hello. It's Nicola and Rosie.
Yeah.
Bonjour.
Nicola and Rosie.
Correct.
Am I right?
I
didn't bother checking backstage.
That's don't great. Bother.
Just thought I'd go with memory and hope I'm right. Okay. 50-50, wasn't it? Got it right? Flo and Joan.
Yes,
yeah. I've got it right again.
Flo, yeah. Yeah. Flo E. Joan in Iceland.
Yeah, Flo och Joan. Yeah.
Flo och Joan.
What was that? What was the ice? This was something in lockdown, right? I'm presuming the Isolation Song Contest.
Yeah. It was at the very early stages of lockdown where everyone was excited to make content for online stuff.
Yeah.
So we like very excitedly went into it and we're like, we're going to write a song and we're like going to make a video for it. And after that, we were like, this is a fucking ball ache and we're not doing it again.
It was lots of art. It was just lots of we transferring videos back and forth, which we hadn't, because we were living in different, Nicola was living in a different city. Right. And it was just sending videos, like all different takes of us just looking down a camera, trying to sing Iceland things. It was absolutely disgusting, actually. It was horrible. We'll never do it again.
Well, hopefully we won't have to do it again, but, you know, yeah. Monkeypox.
We'll see.
Monkeypox. Were you separate for the entire lockdown?
Yeah.
Fucking brilliant.
It was lovely, yeah. It was lovely. It was, yeah.
We've been like we were in the middle of a tour when it all kind of kicked off. Yeah. So we were due to spend basically every day of our lives together from like September 2019 until September 2020 together, which we're adult women and sisters and you shouldn't do that with anyone, as we've all now found out. So we could have told everyone in advance that spending 24 hours a day with someone's a fucking nightmare. But yeah, so it kind of hit right at the end in sort of March, and I don't know if you heard it hit in March. yeah, it was nice to begin with because we were just like, oh, we don't have to see each other. This will be really nice. Thinking it was 3 weeks like the rest of us, and then obviously it turned into 6 months or whatever, but
I think it was a bit longer than 6 months.
My Maya calendar said 6 months.
Did you start to miss each other? Did you start yearning for each other?
Yearning? honestly, no.
No.
Because we'd still like chat. We'd still chat and, you know, talk about stuff, but we didn't. I didn't miss working. No offense, but I didn't miss working.
No,
with
I
you.
Heartily agree with no. you.
yeah, it was. It was. We are actually quite lazy as humans. I think if we don't have to do anything, we won't do anything.
Okay. Yeah.
So we would talk a lot about like things that we're watching and you know stuff. And we'd talk about, because you were living with our parents. You were living with our mum.
Yeah, I hit the jackpot.
So we mostly just talk about. talk about what you've been up to at home.
What I've been tolerating in the parental home, yeah.
And then, yeah, we didn't do a lot of work stuff. But then you moved back to London in September. So, we had about six, seven months apart. And then you moved back. And then we bubbled. And then we got COVID within the bubble.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good times. Yeah.
It's good times.
Yeah.
I mean, I know we talked about this last time. Three years ago, you were on the last day of the Edinburgh Fringe podcast, which, you know, is in some ways not the best show to do to publicise your own show. but in some ways. Obviously, I've been in a double act and I wasn't related to the person in the double act and it was still very difficult to... I mean, I've been in a couple. And obviously, that's a big part of your shtick on stage. How much of the reality is coming onto stage, and how much is it an exaggeration, or how much does it help you get those frustrations out, I guess, as well?
I think we started off quite professional and didn't bring a lot of the outside onto the stage. And now I think if you come and see more than one show, you'll be able to tell when we've had a ruck, like right before we've walked on. I think now we sort of, there's a little bit more brought on, I think, but I think there's nothing more. I think it's people are sort of fascinated by double acts in general because they're like fascinated by the friend relationship and like what the vibe is. And I think there's a little bit more like ick added when they're siblings. You're a bit like, oh God, what's this going to be? And so I think there's nothing to me. The warring, like the kind of fighting double act and stuff as well. Like it gets a little bit eggy, I think, when you're a sibling. I think it's a bit embarrassing because you can sort of see what you were like as kids, which might seem fascinating to some people, but if I was watching it, I'd be like, oh, this is embarrassing. Like, I can see what your mum was going through. Like, I kind of don't... I'm not a fan. So we try and keep it off, I think.
I think people would be worried. They'd be scared to laugh. If you... Like, a lot of double X stick is, like... falling out with each other on stage, or Martin said this, I can't say my bit, rah, rah, rah. But if we do that...
That was great.
Thank you very much. if we do that, people are like, oh no. What are they going to talk about after the show? Yeah. They're going to have to go to their family funerals and not talk to each other and all of that stuff. So I think, I don't know, we don't ever fall out on stage. We don't even call each other out.
We barely acknowledge there's another person on stage, I think.
No. We've only just started looking at each other on stage now.
You've had sort of around about 30 years of practice as a double act, I suppose. So it feels like a good double act because you're different, you know, you're more extroverted, you're more introverted, although you're sort of a little bit of both. You've got a similar attitude, I suppose, in that you're both quite world weary. It's a wonderful show, and the other show is fantastic as well. It's like you can watch Amazon Prime as well as going to go to see their show live, and they're joyous shows and they're lovely shows, but there's a lot of kind of angst and sadness and
that's the bit from the outside that we do bring on the set.
I mean, is that because there's always been quite a lot about dating and about you being single, and is it that I can't believe that you're both very showbiz and very hot in the show, I would say.
So, oh, yeah, we're smoking in that show.
But you're very hot.
Gorgeous.
So I can't believe... It's like when you see all these 20-something stand-up men going, oh, yeah, I'm so bad with girls, I can't get a girlfriend. And then they come off stage and, there's a line of women.
Yeah.
Is it the same for you guys? Are you pretending that you're dating disasters whilst...
We have a hot tub backstage at the Assembly Roxy that's just filled with beautiful people, and we just pluck one splooshy one out, and then, oh, that sounded terrible, actually. What a horrible turn of phrase.
No, it's quite the opposite. I don't know if you know this about musical comedy, but it is a boner shrinker as far as the eye can see. It's not an attractive sport.
No.
It really is. There's something really sexy about stand-up, and there is something not sexy about musical comedy.
When we do it. Not to cast the net over all of them, but...
Actually, yeah, Tim Minchin, he's a very sexy man. He's got it right. We
should stop wearing shoes, and maybe we'll... Actually, that would put people off me even more, I think, if I took my shoes off.
I don't know, but I think it's very glam, this show. It feels rock and roll. You're dressed up in rock and roll gear. You're playing the drums.
Yeah, it's
last
hardcore.
Time you're playing recorders. It feels like it's moved on a bit.
I think we pick instruments that are sexy when the opposite sex play them. So it's quite sexy to watch a drummer, like a male drummer.
Wait, one second. I think I look pretty cool. I think when I play it.
Okay, well, I'll talk about myself playing the recorder. I don't think it's sexy to watch a grown woman play the recorder, and I don't think I'm wrong there.
I'm glad you think it's quite a hardcore, sexy rock and roll show. Yeah.
But I think people who are funny are sexy.
You're in the minority, according to my dating apps. I think.
Really? Yeah. So you talk about dating quite a lot, and there's a few songs about dating, and I'm sort of fascinated about the dating of your generation because it's sort of, you know, I stopped dating just as it got easy to date people. Yeah. it's a terrible tragedy. Though I'm quite glad that happened to me at that point. So is it as awful as everyone makes out? And, you know, it sort of feels like, as an observer, with the idea you've got Tinder or whatever, that you can find people to go out with and hook up with fairly easily, but then it's just...
Yeah, for hookups, I think it is easy. I hope I'm not offending anyone in this room who's met someone on a dating app. But I think you have to, like, you have to be quite open to the person. You have to be open to all the possibilities. And I think when you're in this job, your job is to sort of just, like, look at a human and find all the wrong things and all the weird things and all the things that you're like, no, you're stupid, you're contributing terrible things to society and blah, blah, blah. So I think when you look at a human, you're looking at, on a dating app, you're looking at them with much more of like a clinical eye to find out everything that's wrong with them, I think. So it's partly on our part, it's probably, we're making it harder for ourselves. Mm. But I do think most people that you come across, I mean, I do date people through the apps. Like, I've been on the dates, but it is hard. I went on a date with someone the other day and they wouldn't stop talking about Ed Gamble. And I was like, well, this will never work. I can't, you know too much about my industry. And this is horrible. Yeah. So it's
the same with my wife, actually.
It's hard because you want them to know your industry, but it also turns you off when they do know your industry. Yeah. So yeah, it's hard. And then comedians are famously horrible people to date.
And you know, you're touring a lot, and you've been, you know, you were just in Melbourne this year again, right?
Yeah. So yeah.
It is hard to maintain relationships.
Yeah, I think as well, like, it's also difficult to start them when you're on tour because we tour together with a tour manager. You can't bring, our car is packed. So like, you can't squeeze an extra body in the car, like full stop. It's also not glamorous to be like, get in the car and sit in the suitcase and the piano case. Like, that's not, that doesn't start things off well. And you also, like, when, again, like with your, maybe it's different with friends. Like, I wouldn't think anything of it if my friends were like, I'm going to sleep with this person. And then like, you'll see them in the morning, probably, don't worry about it. I don't want to see who my sister's fucking. Like, I just don't need to, not until they're like fully married for like 10 years. I don't think I need to meet that person.
All right, Virgin Mary.
Yeah.
Well, are you still sharing? Amen. Because I think last time we talked, you were talking about sharing rooms, and there's a sort of tragic line in the show, which is brilliant, talking about being in twin beds in a travelodge, cutting a quiche in half with a credit card.
Yeah, yeah.
I suspect, you say it's not true, they're not based on reality of the show.
It was fully fucking true. Yeah.
It was
fully
true. It happened in Southport in a hotel called The Scaresborough, which we turned up to the venue and they were like, where are you staying tonight? And we were like, oh, we're just over the road in The Scaresborough. And they went, oh, I wish you'd have said. We were like, oh no. Then we got in there. It was a Green King pub underneath the hotel. Then we got up there. When we went after the show, we went back to the hotel, and across the room, across the hallway was a room that had two bouncers on one of the doors. We got into our room. There was blood splattered up the wall. The carpets were wet and they smelt like yeast. And then we watched Naked Attraction and cut a quiche with a credit card. Yeah.
So it was worse than being in a travel lodge.
Yeah.
Which takes
some doing. Standards at least. Yeah. They've got some people to uphold.
But. Yeah.
Yeah. Horrible. We've moved up we've got separate rooms this year, so that's quite nice. That's how we know we're doing well, is that we don't have to turn around to get changed anymore because we're in the same space.
Yeah. Well, I thought, you know, I did think that's, you know, it's all for, I'm all for, I mean, we did it a little bit when we toured with the double act in the early days. I think I probably mentioned this before, but Stu and me stayed in a bed and breakfast. There was three of us, so it was two rooms and three of us, and we tossed for it, and me and Stu ended up sleeping in twin beds with a little pink canopy.
Oh, cute.
Between the two of them. I wish we'd taken a photo of that.
Yeah, that's
they didn't
cute.
Have cameras in those days.
They didn't, no. We'd have had to stand still for a very long time to get the photo. So I think that's important for you guys to be... And are you in the same flat in Edinburgh, or have you got...
Same flat, but for the first year, two different rooms.
Yeah, we're really fucking moving on up this year. Yeah. It's quite nice.
It is hard. Yeah, the budget doesn't go far.
I know.
Tell me about
it. It's hard.
It.
Yeah. I think that's why loads of double acts don't go the whole way, because it's hard. It's not easy.
Well, it once you split up, there's no, you don't want to go back unless, you know, unless things are going badly, you don't want to go back because you suddenly then get all the money yourself.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to split the two of you up.
Don't worry.
Because, well, you know, but again, it's something you, that's mentioned in the show, is the idea of you being, you know, how long is it going to go on? Will you be singing spinster sisters? Is your fear?
Tell me, but you haven't.
But it feels like it would be, you know, it does feel like such a solid act. I can't, you know, I can see it going on for 50 years.
Well, that's the thing as well. Even if it is successful, I don't think I want to be doing this in 50 years' time. So it's okay to sing songs, but I think, I don't know. I think it will become, I don't think it will become rock and roll as rock and roll it is at the moment. I don't think it will be that. Like, if you're 60 still singing about being single, I think it's going to actually be quite
tragic.
Yeah, I think there'll be medication involved along with that.
Yeah.
Entertaining. I mean, it's tragic
for you.
I mean, it's tragic at the moment. It's you know, you're still
hang on.
You know, by Victorian standards, you're spinsters. You're elderly spinsters.
We're dead.
Well, you know, but what would you do? What? Where do you see yourselves going? What would you like to move into if the worst happened and you decided Flo and Joan could no longer carry on? What would you like to do? Or would you? Because I'm sort of interested in the writing process as well. Would you carry on writing together? And how does it work when you're... Do you write different songs or do you collaborate when you're writing the songs?
We, like, do collaborate. I wish there was, like, a nice, fun, glamorous, like, exciting story of, like, we have a massive punch-up in the garden and whoever wins gets the lyrics that day or something. But, like, it's pretty... Like, someone will come up with an idea. One of us will come up with an idea, pitch it to the other one and then be like, no, that's shit, I don't want to do it. And you're like, okay, cool, well, we'll do another one. But yeah, it's pretty balanced. Like, maybe one of us will take it away and write it. Like, we'll talk about it a bit and then write it and then bring it back. And I don't know, it's really boring, but it is very balanced.
Yeah. It's always a fun game of if one of us really likes a premise to a song, you have to, and the other one's like, I can't see any legs in it. So for example, the Alien Boyfriend song. I really liked that song.
I fucking hated that song.
I remember waking up in it was like a Saturday morning and I was like, oh, this will be funny. And I wrote a few lines and I sent them to Nick and I was like, what about this? It's a song about blah, blah, blah. And then I said the lines and you laughed, but you're like, yeah, whatever. And then everyone who we met, I was like, can I just try this? These couple of lines? Do you think this is funny? And I kept on saying them. And everyone was always like, yeah, it's so funny. It was hilarious. And then I think I just carried on writing it. And I was like, can we just give it a chance? Please, can we give it a chance? And we did it the first time and it died on its hole. It was awful.
Yeah.
But
I've never felt so vindicated in my whole life.
But I think we didn't have enough songs or something. We were like, we'll just keep on going on this one. And it's turned out to be still one of my favourite songs of the show.
I hate every night. It's like the penultimate song in the show. And if it goes well, I'm so fucking fuming for the like last 10 minutes of that show. And on the few nights where people are like, meh, I gloat so hard. I love it.
But yeah, it's fun like working out who wants, like what hill are you going to stick your...
Yeah.
I don't know what the phrase is.
Who are you going to die on? Stick your heels in?
The hill you're going to stick your heels in?
What hills
you're going to die in?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
In it on a hill.
Yeah, that one.
That works.
Yeah,
it is. That one got me thinking. The Alien Boyfriend, because you know, at some point, if it's possible to procreate with an alien, someone will be the first person.
Yeah, and we'll hear about it on this morning.
I mean, it's kind of because no one will know who the first person to fuck a dog was.
Yeah,
that's happened, and it's not gone down in history.
Yeah,
but whoever's the first person to fucking alien,
they're going to be waving down in history.
It's like Neil, but bigger than Neil Armstrong, isn't it? I'm the first one to fucking alien or be fucked by an alien.
Oh, that. Oh,
because not only have you got up to space, which is like an achievement in itself.
Yeah,
yeah.
You've got out of a suit or put a special suit on, and then coaxed an alien into the suit
inside the
or
suit.
Out of the suit.
Yeah,
or you found like your special fuck palace on Mars or whatever. Yeah.
I mean, you weren't going to hang in that. No.
From the aliens' point of view, I don't know if they would. The rest of the aliens would frown on the alien for having sex with the.
Well, human. They'd like cheer them, put them on their shoulders, and cheer them out like a football hero.
I think it'd be more like it would be like having sex with a dog.
Yeah,
I think from their point of view, it'd be like, look, no one's done it. I just wanted to see what it was
you
like.
It could be a. It could be like a sign of honor on their planet, or they might be waiting. Maybe their whole life has been waiting for. That's what they were bred for. Is for. Someone, some sexy person.
For one of us to be sexy enough.
Yeah.
To be fucked.
For Russell Brand to walk onto the planet and then.
In the Spice World movie, isn't the first thing the aliens. When the ice. Sorry, fans of Spice World, hello. They like beam some aliens. They find some aliens, and the first thing they do is like grope Mel B or someone.
Before our time?
Yeah, 1997. You couldn't do that now, could you?
Gary Glitter was in that film in the original.
Oh, amazing.
He was? Gary Glitter was filmed a bit for that film.
Oh, brilliant.
I don't know why he didn't make the final cut.
No. And Meatloaf drove the bus.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And Richard O'Brien
was hiding in a toilet for most of the film.
What a film. What a star cast. Richard, I remember his little head coming out the toilet.
Yeah.
Oh, bring it back.
Yeah. I had Georgia Pritchett, who was one of the writers on the film, on my book club podcast.
I just read her book on holiday.
It was so good.
Yeah. It was so funny. Yeah, I read it twice.
Oh, good. Yeah. There's lots of funny stuff in it. That's good. Well, I'm going to try and be... You know, it's possible someone's already had sex with an alien.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, the Virgin Mary maybe was that. Maybe that.
Yeah. You'll be able to tell because when you go up to Mars, there'll be one alien that everyone looks at differently.
Yeah.
Him. They're like, oh, bet it's him.
He's tired.
It might not be possible. It might not be possible. But if there's a way... We'll find it. There only needs to be like a hole in the alien somewhere, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't even need to be a genital. It could be anything.
No. Yeah. Hopefully there's just sort of some kind of jelly mass and you can just stick it wherever you need to.
I think it's possible.
Is this what you wanted on Monday at 1 p.m?
Yeah, I think when we can get this feeling like, an evening show. It feels like I'm nearly ready for bed, as I said to you. I stayed up very late to watch your show, which finished at 10 past 9.
Yeah. It does look like you're ready to read us a story in that chair.
It does,
as well.
Yeah.
Very Jack and Nora vibes.
I went home to bed, it was nice. I slept in the same bed as my son last night. It's all, you're allowed to do it when you're related to them.
Yeah.
And it was the nicest thing. It's so nice. It's worth having a kid. It's a lot to go through. Wait till they're about 4 and then just have a cuddle with them in bed. It's better than any theatre. It's better than anything. It's even better than The Cat in the Hat.
Oh, that's lovely.
It was lovely. But you can't say I slept with a 4-year-old last night and it's, without people. Because people have got horrible minds, haven't they?
Yeah,
I slept with a 4-year-old boy last night and it was the most beautiful experience of my life. And if you've got a problem with that, you're the sick one. Hello, Colin, by the way. So I should have said hello. Can everyone else see him? Yeah, okay, no, that's fine. I'm just because he's been haunting this podcast for many, many years. And I'm not sure he's real. Let's ask you some emergency questions to get out of the awkwardness I've created by saying it's good to sleep with. If they're your child and you're just cuddling them, it's all...
So you sleep next to them?
Well, yeah, but it was also like his little arm is you're just holding his hand. It's nice.
That is really lovely.
I'm glad that we're on this episode that when the pool quote comes out of I slept with a 4-year-old tomorrow starring Flo and Joe...
And then you're also thinking, like, you know, it'll be so soon that you wouldn't be able to do, you know, like he'll be a man really soon.
Yeah,
yeah.
And he'll be a teenager really soon. And there'll be the window you have of this loveliness is so small, and you're sort of heartbroken. That's what I mean. It's this beautiful moment of theatre. It's better than any of this shit you're going to see. Just sleep with 4-year-old kid. If you haven't got one, just borrow one. I'd say I'd rent out mine, but I'm looking at the audience and I'm not letting you anywhere near. Let me ask you an emergency question to get out of this embarrassment. Flo and Joan, if you could go into a chrysalis, like a caterpillar, but you're still you, and you dissolve like a caterpillar would, and then you come out as something completely different, or slightly different, and you could choose what you come out of the chrysalis as. What would you like to come out? It's a hard emergency question to start with. Sorry, dude.
Mm.
What would you come out as? What would you? You can change yourself, or you can change into something else.
A massive rock.
A massive rock.
Yeah,
okay. That's fine.
I don't know. I panicked and thought. Well, I was like, I want to be something bigger.
Yeah.
I mean, you could say I'd just be me bigger. You don't have just to become a mountain.
I'd like to be the size of a human woman, actually. yeah, I want to be something bigger. You can see a lot. You get, like, battered a lot, but if you're, like, by the sea.
Yeah.
People get to explore you. Really regretting this, actually. Yeah. I don't know.
It was thank you for jumping in.
Thank you. Yeah, otherwise you would have had loads of silence to edit out.
A big rock.
Go on, say something profound.
I'm scared now. Well, I would love to be... I would love to be a train that never stops.
Fuck you.
Shit! I was just thinking, I want to be something that moves. I want to be something big. It's something that moves. I was thinking, because when the butterfly comes out, it just goes, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
So something that just
lands
goes
in the sea like a big rock.
Yeah, well.
I mean, are the passengers on you just stuck on you and unable to ever escape? It never stops.
That would be good. But yeah. I'd make my passengers people like palatable people that I like, a mix of people that I like, maybe my worst enemies, so they can't get off. Yeah. And then I just, it would be, what's that film? Snowpiercer. It would be like Snowpiercer, where I'm at the front, where the really, I don't know if you've seen that film, but all the terrible things happen in the back.
Okay.
And you've got to get to the front of the train. Is that the premise? Yeah. So I would put all my enemies at the back of the train. I would be a living Snowpiercer train. That was what, the final answer.
That's good. See, it tells you a lot psychologically about people, that question. Fucking
yeah, that we have terrible fucking answers.
Well, that you want to keep moving and I'm like, I want to be a rock and never move for the rest of my life.
And you could go through, there could be a tunnel through the rock. That
yes,
you could go.
Yeah. Yeah, you could be the giant tunnel that I whiz through every day and we just high-five. Yeah. You could load up the trolley, just throw all the...
I don't know what you think a rock does, but...
But so, you know, I move stones around a field, and I think rock. Has
Are you a druid?
I'm not. I'm in a way. I'm a sort of shaman, I suppose. I'm trying to create a wall visible from space. But rock is eternal, basically, isn't it? I mean, as much as anything. And so I would like to be made out of stone. My ultimate aim is to replace each of my body parts with a stone, and then live forever as a stone man. Can still move around.
Same vibes. Oh, you want to move? Okay.
Yeah, I want to move. I want to walk around in Stone Man. And I lost a testicle, and I, you know, could put that's one. I could put a stone in there. Yeah.
One really heavy one, big pebble.
So you know, I'm on my way. Careful, careful what you wish for is what I'd say.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what big wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
How many members of Blazing Squad can you name?
One.
Who's the one you can name?
Dappy.
He's not from Blazing Squad.
Is he not?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, he was N-dubs. What a fucking fail. How embarrassing. And then none.
None. I haven't got any signal here, so I can't confirm, but I knew that one was wrong.
Yeah, you're right.
Was there one called Len?
Len, I think
you
so,
think
yeah.
Of Len Goodman.
Len Goodman. Blazing Squad.
You're thinking of Strictly Come Dancing.
No, I'm thinking of Len. I'm sure there was.
Yeah, definitely.
There were 7 members in Blazing Squad.
There were 7. It feels like more, doesn't it?
I don't know how many of them.
No. Okay. Which celebrity have you been uncoolest in the company of? Do you hang around with the celebs?
No.
I'd say the festivals.
I don't know what you count as a celebrity. Sarah Keyworth. I think maybe possibly because it was the first name that came to my head was. Where we did in 2018 we did the cab bar in the Pleasance, and the show after us was
Richard Coles,
and it was always an interview show, so we'd always have a famous guest. And one of the shows he'd had Ruth Jones.
Are you okay? You literally can't remember anyone.
I am dead. Ruth Jones, and they were making loads of noise behind the show. During our show, you could hear them in the back just clamoring around. And we came, and you never know who's gonna you come off doing a big show, and then Judy Murray is in the changing room. You're like, I can't compute this. And Ruth Jones was there, and I came off and immediately said, as a joke, I was like, oh, you guys were loud. And then I realised it was Ruth Jones, who I absolutely love. And I think she was like, I'm sorry.
And we bustled through with 10 recorders in our hands as well, looking like the biggest fucking losers in the world,
You made too much noise when we were playing the recorder.
Fucking horrible.
That was the first thing that came to my head, but we're famously quite uncool in front of many
everyone,
people.
Everyone, celebrity and non-celebrity.
Yeah. I once said something. What was I said? Something really embarrassing in front of someone and then we came away. What was it? You were like, I can't believe
you've given
said
me
that.
No information to go on right now.
Oh no, it was actually a bad thing. I won't say it. Move on. I remember what it was.
Oh, yeah.
But I won't say that.
No, don't do that one.
It was bad.
No,
all right, it's not nice.
Was it racist? Because that's the only thing I told you not to be.
No, it was
very racist.
It was not that. It was not that.
Good. It seems unlikely, but it could. No, look, but you're saying, you keep on going about being uncool, but I think this show is, I think you're very cool in the show, but I also think musical comedy has become pretty cool. And your stuff is very, as a lot of musical comedy is now, it's very dense with lyrics, right, and very fast and full of lyrics. And there's a lot of people, Jazz Emu's doing fantastic stuff.
He's so
cool.
Good. He's great.
Ben Minchin's very cool. Yeah. I mean, your stuff is also cool. I think it is, it is obviously it's the defense mechanism, say musical comedy is naff. You're good and it's funny.
What I think is I've been thinking about this a lot recently. But I think the cool thing about the thing that makes stand-up really cool is that people still believe that you're making it up on the spot.
Yeah.
So people just believe you're this hilarious person usually, who just kind of goes out and says these amazing funny things for an hour and a half. And that is really cool. There's nothing cooler than looking like you haven't tried, but you're really funny. And there is nothing as a musical comedian, you cannot hide the fact that so much effort has gone into it. When you walk in and see a drum kit and a piano and a laptop and 50 instruments and a million words, you look like a tryhard because you are. Even though stand-ups put the same amount of effort in, everyone puts the same amount of work in, but when it looks like you haven't tried, that's really cool. And when you look like you're really fucking trying, it just takes the edge off it, I think.
Yeah. But I like that you think we're cool.
Yeah, that's nice.
But I also think there's an element, I think with stand-up, it was all, if someone turned up with a little ukulele or a guitar, it felt like cheating because it's easy to get around. You always get a round of applause, basically. And often that kind of act was, and certainly by no means all of them, was a little bit lazy and just didn't, and would get the laugh. So I think that's where that idea comes from.
Yeah,
but I think I think the amount of work in that your shows is, it's bamboozling. It's incredible because you just sort of think, how have they managed to learn this and get it
great
out?
Great question.
Because there's two of you at once as well, so you have to get it right.
Yeah. I got quite a few things wrong in the show last night. I forgot to say the very last final thing of the show, which is the colour blue.
Yeah.
And I just smashed my drums and just left it to you. And I was like, how did I forget that? That's the easiest thing to remember. It's the very end of the show.
Yeah.
I forgot a few things last night. Yeah. We sing Blue Dabba Dee Dabba Dye for the whole show. Yeah. That's what it is, an hour.
That's the Blue Man Group.
That's the Blue Man Group, yeah. Reveal.
Though there was quite a lot about Joseph in the Technicolor Dreamcoat where that idea comes from. It wouldn't be any good with you two guys because I think you know it too well. I was proposing my previous guest, Bill Alzaffer, who's never seen Joseph in the Technicolor Dreamcoat. I don't think that me and him put on production of it, but we're not allowed to go and check anything. It has to be entirely from memory.
Yes,
I can remember the first line, and then I've got to put the rest together. But if I did it with you, you'd probably know it all off by heart, right?
A lot of it.
A large chunk. Yeah.
That's a really good idea for a show.
Yeah.
Getting a comedian or comedians to, you give them the musical and they've got to do it without note. That's really good
and
idea.
One of you knows it and one of you doesn't. But like sort of vaguely
knows
it.
One of you knows it a bit. So I can start off and then, you know, and probably when I got to the fair a bit, I'd be off. You know, that'd be great, that bit.
Yeah.
And I'd have a hat and everything.
Yeah.
And then I'd go, oh no, I don't know it as well as I thought I did.
Yeah. Do you have, like, if you're doing a musical, do you have someone playing the piano who knows it all the way through? So then it means you kind of have to guess. Or do you think that's giving you too much of a hint if you know it?
I think they need to roughly know it.
Okay, so this is an a cappella retelling of Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
With a selection of props, some of which might be in the proper production, but some of which aren't.
Yeah,
those stupid, you know, those musical theatre boots that every Amdram has, that they're like black boots, they look like pirate boots, and whatever show they have, they just seem to wear these black boots, you know? Yeah. Any Amdram fans in the house?
Cool.
But did you both were in a production for real at school or was the
at school? Yes, yeah.
In our primary school, yeah.
Yeah.
And all the mums, they knitted together a big coat.
I don't think it was knitted. I think that would be too heavy for an 11-year-old to drag out on stage.
It was
like
pretty impressive.
Material,
yeah, parachute, and it rolled up. It was actually made at the time as a kid. You thought this is fucking West End stuff. They used to roll up the coat and strap it underneath Joseph, and at the end all the kids would pull the coat and one of the teachers would put a light underneath the parachute, so it looked amazing and we did it all in our canteen.
And you did a song in the last show, and I don't think I talked about this last time, and I messed up by not doing so, about sex robots, which I'm very interested in, and the ethics of it more than the use of them.
Yeah.
Would you consider having sex with a sex robot cheating on your partner if you were in a relationship? Or do you think it's okay because they're not really a person? Because I think it's okay. So I just think it just would like confirmation that if I would have sex with a sex robot in my marriage, then that would not invalidate my...
I've watched too many documentaries where this scenario is played out. And you can see the person who's like, yeah, it's totally fine that my husband has sex with a sex robot. She's like another member of our family. And then they always cut to her, like, filmed, like, through a door, just crying into a mirror. And so now, having seen enough of those, I feel sorry for the person on the other side.
It doesn't help that all the people who currently make sex robots are really weird and
they're
creepy and
perfect.
It doesn't help. They're all, you go to them and they're all sort of smiling and there's the sex robot and you go... You're smiling because you've just fucked this.
Yeah, it's covered in
and
your cheers.
You're really happy with yourself. And they're smiling. And...
Yeah. This is Jimmy.
So it doesn't help me. I just want to use a sex robot in a nice way.
I think it's okay. End.
Yeah. What if it's a sex robot of your partner when you first met them?
Oh!
Now that is
then yes.
It's a compliment, isn't it? It's a nice compliment.
What about if you get a sex robot of both of them and then you see if the sex robots can have sex with themselves and then it's like you can watch your younger selves having sex with each other.
Yeah.
Without like the old and the young having to like do it separately. Or you can just pass them around and see what it feels like for everyone. So like old and old, young and young and old, young and old. Robot, human. Yeah. Just like a nice menage.
Well done, because you've actually shocked me with your disgusting ideas. So it's
this wasn't where I thought this interview was going to go today.
No, but then, you know, you have a song about sex robots. So.
Yeah, true. But you have brought up, the only two songs you brought up are the two ones about fucking inanimate things.
And then Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor just to like bridge the gap.
Well, there are a lot of the songs do touch on more serious subjects, but you still manage to find the funniness in them. There's one about basically not being able to walk home, being scared to walk home at night, which is a funny song because you manage to find funny ways of, you know, helping yourself, but it's obviously a very serious subject. And is that important to you to put those in as well as the sort of more lighthearted ones, or is it?
Yeah, I think so. It came from us both being like in different situations, being like, oh, I got followed home by someone yesterday, and it was fucking horrible.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like, it wasn't a therapy thing of like, if we sing about it, it will feel better, because that's psychotic. But like, it was just a thing where you're like, oh, everyone, like, all of my friends have gone through this. Like, I know so many people, and like, not just women as well, like all kinds of people who are like, yeah, I'm fucking scared to walk home at night. It's horrible. But we found a fun, we were like, oh, what if it sounds like a country song? That would be fun. Like, just trying to find a way to do it that it's like, it gives a bit of, it means that you, we're always like, we don't sing about anything that we don't like either experience or like actually have an opinion on. Like, everything comes from like truth in some way or whatever. So it's not just like, oh, we've heard about this thing that this person experienced, let's do it. But yeah, I think it just adds like a different tone as well, I think, that yeah, it just gives it a bit more heft in some places.
But weirdly, that's because we've been touring a version of this show, and that song has been in the show for like all the first 60 dates that we did, and it was always a really funny song. Like, the audience loved it, and we did it on the first Fringe show here, and it was almost silence, and we were like, this is really different. We just couldn't understand why. And I think, I don't know, I still don't quite know. No. Our Saturday night audience laughed at it a lot, but I wonder if that's because they're more like less theatre, like less arts crowds. I don't know whether arts crowds are just like, no, this is a serious subject, we shouldn't laugh. And people on the outside are like, ah, oh, I get chased.
I've got a car.
You're like, okay, well. But I think it does make you. I think what's good is all of the stuff is your reality. And again, it's luckily this is happening more. But it's a female reality in comedy, which 10 or 15 years ago you wouldn't have seen anything like this at all. Now, thankfully, things are changing. But I think it is like that's a really serious topic. So as much as it's funny you being dressed as blueberries and dancing around or whatever it is, that it is like, oh my, but being made to think about the subject, which is surely part of it, isn't a bad thing.
Yeah, I mean,
nice if people are laughing as well.
Yes, always good to laugh at trauma.
But it's and I think in the one you do one about middle-aged comedians being upset that they're not allowed to do things anymore, or not understanding the world anymore, which is a sort of fun song with a serious point.
Yeah, it starts from an opinion, but it ends very silly. I think most of the jokes in that song aren't really about the opinion. They're just a song about things that it's hard to do. That's one of our favourite ones because it feels silly. It doesn't feel too heavy.
No.
Yeah, I like that one. I like that one.
I hope you like them all. Oh, look, did I ask about this before? You're on the Raw Variety performance, which I think is always...
I think we hadn't done it when we were last on here.
No, that's right. Yeah, probably not. So how was... Because that's an interesting experience. Again, as an alternative act as well, or a more alternative act, it's quite a mainstream show to do. Did it go well for you?
It was stressful. Because I remember Tom Allen coming up to us and saying, oh, you're doing the Royal Variety. Just so you know, like, just when you're doing it, sell it in the room like you're killing it. Like, whatever you do, don't be scared by the audience. They're a weird audience. They are, because they're a lot of them come every single year.
Make sure you look like you're having the best gig, because if you die on your hole, they're just going to put a laugh track on it anyway. Yeah. So like, don't, like, if it goes terribly, they're not going to put it out going badly.
Yeah.
So they're like, bump the light, spoiler, sorry, we've just been taken off. I don't know, whatever. We'll edit that bit out. But as in like, they were like, you'll either get cut altogether, or if they put it on telly and it's gone badly, they're going to bump the laughs a little bit. Otherwise they look like dickheads for putting someone on who's not done a good job.
Yeah.
Sorry, Andrew.
But it went well in the it went really well in the room. Yeah. We came away being like, Jesus Christ, that was great. But I think they cut the things that we thought they were going to keep, and they kept the things
that we wish they'd cut.
It was a memorable experience. It's on it when you're there. You're like, I can't believe, like, not many people get asked to do it, and it was the pressure's on because you don't want to fuck it up in front of
who was the people. which royal was.
We had Katie and Willie up in the box. Yeah. They told us that they watch a lot of comedy.
We knew they were lying.
it was nice. It was a real, it was an honour.
They looked like they were getting on well, the two of them.
I did notice someone stood in the back of their box with what looked like a massive dildo on.
What goes on behind closed boxes stays on behind.
You don't get invited back now.
Have you done it?
No.
They
wouldn't have me on there talking about.
I don't know. They would.
They wouldn't.
You're a friendly face.
They wouldn't have me on.
Yeah. they were putting a good word in the palace.
Thank you. Let me. I just the only thing I'd like to do is the lineup afterwards. I just love the photos of the old ones where you just see the most unlikely group of people.
It was like
the Queen or something. Yeah. It's just such a funny.
It is funny.
We were stood next to the guy that won Britain's Got Talent, who was like the 90-year-old beef eater. He ate beef.
Eating beef.
Yeah. Who, bless him, I don't think he knew what was going on because he was that old. Very talented man, obviously. And then a contortionist from Cirque du Soleil.
Okay.
And then Mabel.
And Mabel, who we'd never heard of, which makes us sound like... Had you?
Yeah.
I didn't know who she was. And then we were like, oh, who's this person called Mabel? Oh, she's fucking huge and fair play. But it was mad. And then there was like... The cast have Come From Away and Robbie Williams and Harry Connick Jr. Where you're like, what the fuck is going on here?
Yeah,
it's mad.
Fever dream.
Terrific. So if you, like, do you have ambitions to, like, Tim Minchin to go and write a West End musical? Or?
We're working on it.
Yeah.
I really want to write for other people. I don't want to be on the stage anymore. No, I do. I enjoy it.
Please stay for like the next 3 weeks. I would love that.
I will stay. I just want to have a little break and then watch other people. Like, I feel like there's other things that we can, like, it's hard to write like big ballads or big show numbers when it's just the two of you because you can't do all the production and everything.
Yeah.
So I want to be able to write big chorus numbers and all of that and like all these crazy harmonies and stuff. So hopefully we'll get time after this tour finishes to, or like write things for like just stories and stuff.
Yeah.
I would like to.
The tour's going on after Edinburgh. You're going on like a big UK tour. Is that right? After
we've extended it. So we did the big 60 something dates and then we're doing an extra 30, I think, at the end of this year.
Yeah.
And then we'll shed a skin and then write the next West End smash is what will definitely happen.
100%. That's what's going to happen next.
That's good. Are you going to see other shows as well? Have you been to see anything yet?
Yeah. We saw Josie Long for the first time.
We'd never seen Josie Long before in our lives.
I can't believe I've never seen her before. I can't believe it. I was genuinely angry. Well, like, my face went hot because I was like, you've been to the Fringe for 5 years and you've never seen Josie Long. You're an idiot. You are an idiot. So I'm going to go through her whole back catalogue. And watch all of that. We saw, what else did we
Sarah
see?
Keyworth.
Sarah Keyworth was, I cried like a little baby in that one.
We're going to see Rob Orton this afternoon.
Yeah,
we've got Rob Orton.
Is that because, like, for me, I think I always find it quite hard to go and see lots of other shows.
Mm.
There's a lot of Edinburghs where I've not really seen anything.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, but I think just because I'm not always in the right state of mind to. I think when I first came up, I saw loads of things, but like as the years went by, it just sort of. Is that an important part of the Fringe for you? The sort of do you go out and do you go to the bars afterwards and stuff like that and hang out?
We do bars.
We do bars.
I've heard of a bar.
We'll do a bar.
Done that. Yeah,
we go and see a lot of it's the opposite for me where I have to go. I like to see lots of shows to take your mind off your own show.
Yeah.
I just like to see what other people are thinking about and doing and watching other people be creative.
And be like good at stuff.
Yeah.
It's and just bad at stuff.
Yeah.
It's like nice to see like a good mix of everything.
I read on one of your reviews, one of the comments was that you'd had someone signing your show in somewhere like Nottingham or something.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I just can't imagine because you go so fast with some of those songs and they're so wordy.
Yeah.
Was it possible for the signer to keep up?
We gave her a script and I think she wasn't expecting a script. And then she was doing a pretty solid job, to be fair, but it was a tour show that she was signing. And we end our tour show with a song called Carol the Cracker Packer, which has got a million. It's just a tongue twister that we sing at 800 miles an hour. And we were like, let's take it a little bit slower than normal just to give this poor woman a chance. And halfway through the first chorus, she just shrugged and gave up.
She tried a little,
it was like cracker packer or something.
Yeah.
Cracker packer.
But it gets, but the joke is that it gets faster.
Like, Carol Cracker Packer packs a cracking pack of crackers. And she was like, absolutely fuck not. No way. And she just shrugged.
We did start the show saying, thank you so much for coming and I'm really sorry. Welcome to the stage. Yeah. She did a good job, but she was absolutely, she had a chair. She sat down on the chair at that point.
And that, the Amazon show ends with a nice little clip of the film of you two together as well. You're a baby,
yeah,
and you're presumably about toddler, 2 years old or something.
I think so,
like
that. Yeah.
It's sort of, and it's you playing the drums, which is great because you play the drums now in the show. So in this show, so it's sort of, is that a weird thing to think that this relationship has been going on that long and that it's now transferred to stage in this way?
I like that you say played the drums, like it wasn't just a one-year-old just smashing some things that have been put in front of it. Yeah,
there's a drum, you're obviously, you know, you're interested in music, and the drum is the focus of the clip, at least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was sort of there, nascent, right from the beginning. So it's fascinating to me that you've been together, that, you know, not working together, but it's building that relationship for that length of time, that then it goes on to stage.
I suppose, yeah. But we didn't really hang out with each other as kids. We didn't do anything together.
We didn't like each other, the sort of long and short of it.
Until university, and then we bonded at university. But we did like school bands and stuff together, but we wouldn't really even talk to each other in the band rooms.
Yeah.
We'd just like walk to the car where Mum picked us up and just sit in silence. Which is actually quite sad, isn't it? we didn't really play music with each other at home.
No.
We went to dancing, but we were different age groups and we just wanted to be really separate from each other.
Yeah.
But you're right. Like when you see like a little video of the two little small humans sat next together, it is cute.
It's quite cute.
It is. I mean, you'd think, you know, I thought you would have made more of it. It's a little throwaway thing at the end of that special, which is well worth watching. And as is the show, the live show, which is, let's give the location and time of your show, which is the
Assembly Roxy, 8:10 PM, every day apart from the 16th.
Correct.
Thank you so much.
And it's selling well, so if people want to go and see it, do go and see it. And there's a website, I'm guessing, flowandjoan.com.
Yeah, that old chestnut, yeah.
Where you can see all about the tour show dates. Absolutely, it's very life-affirming, it's good, and it's much cooler than you think. You're cooler than you think you are.
Thank you,
Richard.
It's a very enjoyable day. That's what's great about it, is because there's a lot of, bleakness in a way, in what you're talking about.
Yeah.
There's some bleak subjects, but it's so funny and you're so charming and lovely. So I wish you, not that my wishing you luck will help, because you're already doing really well.
I feel like you've said it and it's like going to have the opposite effect where when you say I wish you luck.
I wish you wouldn't get anyone coming. I hope from now on, no one comes and sees
it
after this.
If anything
I hope
to
you
happen.
Listen to this and decide not to come and actually give their tickets back.
Yeah.
And say, I want a refund. Thank you very much. Good luck with finding the partners.
I thought it was like a threat. I thought you were going to say good luck with finding...
Which will destroy your whole act.
It sounded like you were going to say good luck with finding purpose. And I was like, yeah.
Good luck fucking with your life not being a series of embarrassments, which is what your songs are about. And you finally finding someone to love you, even though you're so unlovable that you don't have relationships.
Disgusting alien fuckers that we are.
I hope you get to sleep with some 4-year-old children at some point.
No, I think that's a you one. You can have that one.
And ladies and gentlemen, give a massive round of applause to Flo and Joe!
Thank you
very much for coming. We're back tomorrow with John Robbins, I think. Thank you. We can go.
You have been listening to Rahulastapa from the Edinburgh Fringe with me, Richard Herring, and my fantastic guest, who I know you know who it was. I'm not going to tell you again. You're not stupid. Thank you to Scamp Regard for playing this music. I'm indebted to my technician and friend, Rhys Thomas. I'm also indebted to Chris Evans, not that one, and to all the fantastic crew at the ballroom, at the assembly rooms, and everyone at the assembly rooms in Edinburgh. What a fantastic lot of people you are. Thanks for all your help. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.